I want to mention that for those of you who do take the tape cassettes of this broadcast by subscription or tape it off the air, and those of you that send for the printed sheets, the two pages, it's one page back to back each week, that have the bibliography and sources of information that I put on the air, if you take the compilation of those sheets and put them together, I punch them a three-hole cutter and put them one set in a spiral notebook, not spiral, a three-hole notebook in chronological order the way I have them on the air. Then I also take them and put them in subject order, such as the Nazis, the intelligence community, various murders, and so forth, Jonestown, and separate them according to subjects. But if you put them in a chronological order and you look at the amount of material that has been covered on KLRB, and you realize that every single program that I have had taps in to these articles that are coming out now, or the investigations that may come out, you realize that this inquiry was long overdue, that the things that I have been saying should have been investigated separately, collectively, for a long, long time, and the powers that be have been sitting on this keg for so long, but Richard Nixon got out of office without their ever tapping any of these things, or even the first 30 primary witnesses of Watergate that were murdered. I wrote an article about that. And then Gerald Ford was in office and slid out, and Jimmy Carter covered this beautifully. He had his roommate, classmate, Turner, is the head of the CIA. They graduated from Annapolis together. But the CIA and Navy intelligence were behind these operations, so it was very cute the way Jimmy Carter, the 4 years he was president, had Navy graduate from Annapolis in the CIA. Now, there's a big conflict going on between Mr. Casey and Mr. Inman. Bobby Inman is from Annapolis, also Navy intelligence. And I think they're going to slide Casey out. As I say, he's holding the fort now because of so many team members being involved in these terrible scandals. Incidentally, Casey's pal, Max Ugel, that got into so much trouble when Casey appointed him as a high official of the CIA, and then the appointment was taken away. He was pushed by Mr. Loeb from New Hampshire, and Mr. Loeb was the man who pushed Casey's position as director of the CIA for Ronald Reagan, because in New Hampshire, Casey swung that critical point for Ronald Reagan in New Hampshire. And the McNeil brothers are still missing. Dennis McNeil was exhumed and declared died of natural causes, but I really doubt that. But the Ugel McNeil brothers are floating around. Casey's under suspicion, and William Loeb died this week, just at a time when there's a lot of heat on these buddies. I think these particular deaths are always interesting to note, that it was William Loeb behind Casey and close with Max Ugel and the McNeil brothers, and he just died this week. Now, speaking of long overdue, there was one article, September 17th this week, Associated Press story. In 1977, the CIA shakeup was linked to Libyan connections. Now, this is how important the Libyan connections were, but they were sitting on it all this time, and this is when Jimmy Carter was president. The shakeup of the CIA took place by Mr. Stanfield Turner, Admiral Stanfield Turner. He was the CIA director, Admiral Stanfield Turner, when Edwin Wilson was in the CIA and Navy intelligence, okay? What they did was that they took 224 agents that were fired in 1977. They had 17 covert agents that originally were fired, linked to Wilson and Turple and Corcoran. Then 157 were asked to retire involuntarily from the CIA. 50 were transferred to other CIA divisions, such as Edwin Wilson was in the CIA, and then they opened an office in Washington and called it Navy Intelligence Task Force 157. And 600 other jobs were eliminated at the time in the CIA, 600 other jobs because of the story of Wilson and Turple. Now, for 700 people, it's actually more than that. It's 807 jobs to be displaced in Washington alone because of Frank Turple and Edwin Wilson. You can believe that's important. And what they probably eliminated were many of the men who were part of the terrorist part of the SLA. That's why you haven't heard much of Carlos the Jackal in the last couple of years. Even though he was visiting these people, he hasn't done too much. The SLA team, the Bidermanovs, the Japanese Red Army, the terrorists, probably those branches had to be hushed up for a while. The shakeup was a small part, of an activity begun by Admiral Stansfield Turner, and it was sparked by the discovery of the relationship of the CIA of Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple to Gaddafi over in Libya. So that was one of the articles this week of the many people, 807 people displaced, some transferred, some retired, and some of the jobs were eliminated completely. That was one of the important articles this week. Another article that came out just 2 weeks ago from a paper, The Oregonian, September the 6th, 1981. An entire page, and I don't mean a column or a half a column, a whole page, headline, it's on John Paisley, Spy Suicide Remains a Mystery 3 years Later. This has to do with John Paisley of the CIA, of Navy Intelligence, of the National Security Agency, who the attorney for his wife and widow is Bernard Fensterwald from the Committee to Investigate Assassinations, who was James McCord's attorney at time of Watergate. It goes into the relationship of John Paisley with George Bush in 1975, with the competition of Richard Pipes, who's now the head of the State Department, along with the other top officials, Alexander Haig and Richard Allen and the National Security Council. There was a conflict where Bush set up Pipes against Paisley. Paisley lost and was murdered. This article brings in the relationship of Paisley to James Angleton, who originally hired Reinhard Gehlen and Hitler's agents from the Eastern Division as soon as World War II was over. It goes into their links to the Nugenhand Bank directly to Australia, and again the Nugenhand operations in 1979-78. He had a direct telephone to Australia, and he was part of the CIA's Office of Strategic Research. This is a full-page article in a little-known newspaper, the Sunday Oregonian, and if you are interested in that and can't get that at your libraries, I don't know if it's available in libraries. If you send me money for copying it, it would be like 10 cents a page. It's a full page, maybe 50 cents, and postage in an envelope. For those of you who can't get it, I'll copy this for you, because John Paisley worked with these people, directly with them, and this article is bringing up many points that link again to this notorious case. Another article that followed of September the 14th, important story, Beyond the Wilson Case, again by Philip Taubman of the New York Times. Ex-CIA agent raises broad issue involving agency and the transfer of arms. Now, this, again, is a half a page of the New York Times, a whole half a page, on the legality and the rationale of the CIA funding terrorists overseas, such as the organizations I told you that they're trying to say come from the left. And this article says, the Wilson case reveals serious weaknesses in laws, regulations of policies, the transfer of arms, technology sent abroad, and how is Ronald Reagan and the administration going to stop United States criminals, this article asks, and how will we prohibit training of terrorists abroad by American citizens when Americans from the Defense Department, the CIA, the National Security Agency can have sale in weapons overseas, to sell explosives overseas, and send all the mechanisms for intelligence operations and skills. We train them here, then they go over to other countries and spread terrorism, and this goes into the various laws and the problems with Mr. Kleins, Thomas G. Kleins, Theodore Shackley, and Mr. Wilson, and it mentions those people. Thomas Kleins is very important. Another article the New York Times has been covering, the Washington Post, September the 10th, got into the story, the relationship with the CIA aide gives credibility to arms seller. Another full page. As I say, I want to emphasize this again. These aren't one-inch column. These are the links to the Miami assassination teams to a Mr. Quintero, who now lives in Dallas, Texas, who works with Mr. Kleins, who associates and has this common lawyer and offices with Wilson. It goes into the assassination teams of Patrick Loomis, the Green Berets, Theodore Shackley, their work in Laos, Indonesia, the Nguyen Bank. The Washington Post finally began heavy articles, two long articles on this subject. The authors are Patrick Tyler and Al Kamen. It was Patrick Tyler I phoned this week, and as I said, you wrote two beautiful articles, but you left out George Corcola. Let's get with it, and you'll, as I say, have the Pulitzer Prize. It's yours. Go for it. And he said, send me your tapes or send sheets, and I will. The next, September the 12th, this is all pouring out now, and I mean pouring out. Here's another large article from the Washington Post, a full half page. The Justice Department is sent bribery allegations. This is similar to the New York Times article, but and it goes into the competition of Edwin Wilson with Admiral Bobby Ray Inman in the intelligence, when he was the head of Navy intelligence and Wilson was in Navy intelligence, and the conflicts with William Casey. And this goes into the interplay and interpolitics of what must be going on in Washington, D.C. as these stories get unglued. Jack Anderson has an article this week, Spying on Each Other. It has to do with Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple, and it's also important because it tells how the CIA gangs up with the National Security and Navy intelligence and how they compete and spy and betray the other agencies, that they spy on each other, that we have the CIA that would centralize after World War II major intelligence gathering areas, but that they spy on each other. And one of the articles I mentioned tells about Edwin Wilson bribing, he's from Navy Intelligence and CIA, bribing another party to set up wiretaps and bug the Army. The agencies are so busy bugging each other that they hardly know what's going on in other countries. The story of Mr. Tafoya finally broke the national news. Last week, I said on KLRB that I didn't believe that Gaddafi had to have anti-Castro Cubans, American CIA, killing people that he didn't like in Egypt or the United States. It didn't make sense. And I emphasize this, that if the CIA wants to kill him, they'll kill him. If they don't want to, they won't. But why does Gaddafi have to come to us to get people to assassinate people he doesn't like? He's mean enough and bad enough, and he's got enough weapons. Goodness knows we sent him 200 million rounds of ammunition and weapons to do it. And where are those exploding typewriters and cigarettes and ashtrays and lamps and rocks? We're supposed to send all that to him, so why isn't he using it? And one of the people he was supposed to have ordered murdered was this fellow in Colorado who was, as I say, seriously wounded in the head. Well, this week after I challenged the allegations that Gaddafi could order all of these things, Richard Tafoya, he's from the Green Berets, said that he shot Zagalli in Colorado in self-defense. This is a student critical of Gaddafi. He shot Mr. Zagalli, I don't know if I pronounce it correctly, Zagalli in self-defense, but he says that he is part of the CIA, that he got a message from the CIA, that he was interviewed by the CIA, and he claims that the CIA is behind the attempts for placing him where he was and for the actions that he did. He told this to CBS, and it had nothing at all to do with Gaddafi. It had to do, again, with Edwin Wilson and the United States assassination teams. Another article from the New York Times, The Odd Couple Running the CIA, and it has to do with William Casey and Bobby Inman of Navy Intelligence. Now, Casey talks Brooklynese because he's right out of the mob, and Inman is the cultured Navy intelligence, and the two of them need each other because the mob and Navy intelligence, from the days that William Casey hired Lucky Luciano and worked with Navy intelligence, have covered this globe with drug traffic, heroin traffic, assassination teams. So it's suiting. It's very good, William Casey and Inman, the odd couple at the CIA, working together. They'll fight each other, but they've got to cover each other's tracks. And while they're the odd couple, I guess they'll be there for a while. Another article in the Washington Post, an editorial this week, the old spooks who don't fade away. And this is in the black arts of covert action, working in the atmosphere of conspiracy, illegality, and so forth. A lot of people question, if you talk about a conspiracy, they laugh. This Washington Post article says, what do you do with old soldiers who are spooks and spies for the CIA who practice the black art of covert action, of conspiracy, of illegal acts, even the black arts, the assassinations? What do you do with them? And it refers to Edwin Wilson and his anti-Castro Cubans and the work that they're doing and their CIA connections. And the article says, aside from media chants, the reason the Wilson Fair is again at center stage, and they now say the Edwin Wilson Fair is at center stage, is that in the interim, a new administration of Ronald Reagan's has come to power that pledged to combat international terrorism, especially Gaddafi. Now, it's sobering news that through the likes of Mr. Wilson and his confederates and some old anti-Castro Cubans of the CIA, that the United States itself has had a hand in creating the very menace that it's combating. And how many times have I called old Reichstag Haig and Heinrich Reagan, you know, fighting terrorism, when how many times can they say that before the truth comes? Well, the answer came in an editorial, finally, besides Mae Brussel on KLRB, saying, now that the Wilson Fair is in center stage, and back there it must be, when Washington Post and New York Times and even the Oregonian are carrying full-page stories, the entire, every word on the page, and editorials, plus smaller articles, when it comes full circle, what do you do when you find out that you created the menace you're supposed to be combating? And this editorial says that Mr. Wilson was up to his Libyan tricks, but some inner sanctum is still running him. And what are we going to do about him? No matter how the old CIA hands and the retirees and the ex-contract employees alike make a good adjustment when they leave their covert action, what do they do in the case of the Wilson Affair, the assassination of Orlando Letelier? What do you do with Howard Hunt and Watergate? And this is an ugly problem. This is the editorial from the Washington Post about the alumni of the CIA. What do you do with the old spooks that were doing the killing that go out then and spread the job elsewhere and continue? Another, and finally, one more article, September 17th, and this is quite a lot of articles this week, just as I say on this subject, 1977 shakeup. This is another one about the Libyan connections and the changing the CIA ranking order because of Wilson and Turple. And finally, one of my subscribers listens loyally and puts his tape on other stations, reminded me of the book, The Great Heron Coup. Some of you have it and some of you don't. It came out in 1980, this last year, by Heinrich Kruger, South End Press, Box 68, Astor Station, Boston, Massachusetts. Maybe this is too fast. If you don't have a pencil, you can phone or write to me and I can tell you how to get it. I think that research must carry The Great Heron Coup, too. And in the back of The Great Heron Coup, in the last chapter, it talks about the Miami conspiracy in Chapter 23. And it goes into the fascist front organizations that are in Miami, where the headquarters of the International Fascista in the United States come and go with great expertise. And it talks about a group of the fascist organization, Paladin, that's the name of Skorzeny's group. They talk about Otto Skorzeny, Kruger does in his book. SS Colonel Skorzeny was a kingpin of the Paladin mercenary group until his death in 1975. Dr. Gerhard Hartmut von Schubert, formerly Joseph Goebbels' propaganda minister, was its operating manager. The headquarters were in Spain. Skorzeny had an export-import office there in Madrid, and it goes into his office, and they worked in the same office with the United States Central Intelligence Agency. Paladin's bankroll includes Skorzeny's weapons empire and Libyan head of state, Muammar Gaddafi. The Skorzeny-controlled World Armco, with main offices in Paris, was registered in the name of their manager, von Schubert. And it goes into their links with the International Fascista in Argentina. International Fascista was a crucial first step to fulfill the dream not only of Scorzani, but his close friend in Madrid, Joseph Lope Rega. Now, Rega is the man directly linked the blood brother to Licio Gelli, who just fled Italy, who's down in Argentina. And it goes in, the great Heron coup goes into the Italian fascist money that after World War II set up the future CIA counterintelligence with whiz James Angleton, and they and other Nazi and fascist powers throughout the world, Europe, Latin America, envisioned a new world order built on the fascist Iron Circle, linking Buenos Aires, Santiago, Lima, La Paz, Brazil, and Montevideo. Now, one of the people that was involved with this operation, the Great Heron Coup goes into, was Theodore Shackley. That's the fellow that I've mentioned on the air here many times. This is the last chapter of the book, The Great Heron Coup. Their station, the CIA station called J.M. Wave, was in Miami. They were responsible for killing Ben Barka in Paris. J.M. Wave's chief was Theodore Shackley, Morocco station chief Robert Wells, and the head of the CIA chief in station in Frankfurt. And that's where Mohammed Ajab, the man who shot the Pope, was linked to the national fascist Nazi group in Frankfurt, Germany, and was in Spain 3 weeks before he went to Rome to shoot the Pope. The CIA contract agent, Fernando Legros, associated with Ben Barka and became a spy. When J.M. Wave and this assassination group had killed Barka in Paris, and he was to work with Castro, they were setting up a third world meeting. When Barka was murdered at the time, he was going to meet with Fidel Castro. When this was dismantled, Theodore Shackley and his staff left Miami for Laos, left behind a trained army of 6,000 fanatic anti-communist Cubans that set up elements of the U.S. far right. In Miami's Little Havana, they set up the Alpha 66 and the Omega 77. Now, those were the groups actually formed in New Jersey by George Coricola, and they had their more notorious leaders were all trained by the Central Intelligence Agency. Between 1965 and 1971, they had sporadic acts of sabotage and assassinations, and they were also being paid by Santo Trafficante and the Syndicate to help spin intricate U.S. narcotic webs. They found time to work for Richard Nixon and his White House staff. They were international drug traffickers. The Great Heron Coup links this group to the 1976 murder of Orlando Letelier and Sandra Moffat, to the DINA, which is the secret police in Chile, the Nazi secret police in Coru, their organization in Miami. Four of the five Cubans involved in killing Letelier and Moffat were CIA veterans of the Bay of Pigs invasion. The attempt and Letelier murder, the Leighton attempt to murder, that's Bernardo Leighton, a member of the Christian Democratic Party in Italy that was, they planned to murder but didn't get that one off, but they killed Letelier, were coordinated by American-Chilean agent Michael Townley. Now, Townley worked for Theodore Shackley, he worked for Edwin Wilson, and what I'm trying to say in this particular program this evening is that finally the major media, and I consider the Washington Post and the New York Times and the wire services picking up, are acknowledging that the United States has a complex problem, that the FBI, the Treasury, the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, the customs, that there is attempted murder, and if they want to go into it, there is plenty of murder that these people have done. This team goes back to the Bay of Pigs. It was involved in killing John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King. John Paisley worked with Lee Harvey Oswald Navy Intelligence in the Soviet division, and I'm sure that Yuri Nosenko was the agent in the KGB, the double agent of Reinhard Gehlen's, who fled to this country as soon as Oswald had been the scapegoat or patsy. Nosenko came here immediately after Kennedy was killed and worked with John Paisley. Now, many books have been written about the narcotics traffic in the world. Many books have been written about the Nazis and the network that was formed at the end of World War II. There are many books on the Bay of Pigs, on the particular individual assassinations. There are inquiries into missing money, millions of dollars, $10 million from a safe deposit in Nice, $5 million another week later, $200 to $300 million at the Wells Fargo Bank, $55 million, the Nugenhan Bank in Australia, $60 million out of the Philippines. We have talked about missing millions. I've talked about people being murdered. I've talked about the places of torture and Nazi headquarters down in Chile, the Colonial Dignidad. I've done many programs on the Pope, who worked at Auschwitz, this particular John Paul II, the teams that killed Nelson Rockefeller. And I'm very confident that they can't gray list or gray mail and hush all of this up. There are too many books out. There are too many people writing articles for it. It may not all come to the apex of the Nazi fascist links, but it may not take too long now. It's been 17 years since John Kennedy was killed. In this book, The Great Heroin Coup, he has many references and other books that have been written on the subject that people can look up. So there's more people knowledgeable on this subject than Mae Bressel. I don't think there's many people that have the nerve to get on the air week after week and say these things, but they are putting it together. This book, The Great Heroin Coup, goes into the Operation Condor, the assassination teams, the links of them to Miami from Argentina. And there's quotations of books that I have had on the air, such as Cook Rich's book, Galen, Spy of the Century, and other books. They have many references and bibliographies throughout this book he has in The Great Heroin Coup. Even he has A Search for the Manchurian Candidate by J.D. Marks on mind control, Carl Oglesby book, The Yankee and the Cowboy War. And he has a quotation from that book of what happens when the United States government puts together its agencies and agents with an international fascist group and with organized crime. There's a quotation in Oglesby's book that I'll finish with, and the U.S. historian Carl Oglesby, this is Kruger saying, sees the origin of the CIA's sinister record in its alliance that it forged immediately upon its birth with Reinhard Galen and Vaslov from Russia that organized what they called Operation Underworld. That was the link of Meyer Lansky, the crime syndicate, with Reinhard Galen, Hitler's chief of intelligence. How can a naive, trusting, democratic republic give its secrets to crime and to the Central European fascists and expect not to see its continent polluted? Now, that is the central crux of the problem that I've been talking about for 10 years. I'm on the 11th year now. And Carl Oglesby words it that way. How can a democratic republic actually survive when the Constitution is polluted by European fascist crime syndicate and they try to manipulate the world? That is the question. How can it survive? And the answer is it can't. What you get is a duplication of Nazi Germany, or you change it now, because you can't keep intending to change it as they get more and more money and more control. The problem has been here a long time. It's getting more carefully defined in the media. I'm glad about that. And look up some of these articles from this week. These are all just in 1 week's time, and you'll find a lot to ponder about and relate to past information. This is Mae Bressel in Carmel, California. You take care, and I'll be back with you next week.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Bressel. This program originates from Carmel, California.